Oh my God, you're still there like a vegetable.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode, Season 6, Episode 3, The Importance of Not Being Too Earnest. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
And now, through the power of editing, you do not hear the 3 minutes of failed attempts at that intro.
Thank you so much, Dave. Hello, Tara.
Hey.
Before we get into this drip-isode, a little news about what's happening on the Patreon in the Again With This Club. This Friday, June 19th, Pride Month will continue with Again With This, episode 292. Let's watch Dean Cain and Kerr Smith and a bunch of other people and the Cedars-Sinai sign in the Greg Berlanti-directed film The Broken Hearts Club. You can rent or buy it on Amazon. We revisited it for me the first time in decades, and we talked all about it. And you can join us for that discussion, againwiththispodcast.com/club. There's almost 300 extra episodes. We're having a deranged time on all of them, and we would love to have you join us. So please do that.
Can I also say, if you decided to purchase it, you would probably not regret it. I feel like this is something that you might revisit in the future. It's very cozy.
It's in that hangout, rewatchable comedy.
Totally.
Like Diner, Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
Those are ones I rewatch a ton. And if I owned this, I would not be mad.
Let's get into this episode, starting with our C-plot. Speaking of Kerr Smith, Jack tries to connect with a prof. We open at the Reverse Threes Company apartment. Emma is drinking a super gross-looking smoothie. It basically looks like she put mint chocolate chip ice cream into the blender, and I'm sure that's not what it is. You can see it in the visual aids. The color is wrong.
Yeah.
Jack comes down to banter with her about how disgusting the smoothie is. In my opinion, being a little too familiar with her for someone who's known her for maximum a week, and also for someone who's eating Flutie Flakes. But when they move on to national stereotypes, she gets right in there. So I guess he has correctly read the vibe. The next time we see Jack, he and Jen are walking into their pop culture class of extremely obvious extras. Sarah and I each picked a different one to highlight. Check those out in the visual aids.
Oh, man. Really shocking.
Yeah. Jack switches spots with Jen so he can sit in the dead center of the class and get the best view of Freeman, Jen teasing him about his open horniness. Audrey plops down on Jack's other side and agrees that Freeman is hot. Jen asks if Audrey doesn't have her own classes to go to, and it took me until then to realize, oh, yeah, she doesn't go there. Audrey shrugs that Worthington's charms are lost on her. Jen says if she misses another week, they might just kick her out. And Audrey says that would be awesome. Jack shushes them, and Jen explains that unlike Fun Jack, Scholar Jack doesn't like to miss a word of Freeman's lectures. And Audrey asks between Jack and Grams how Jen ever naps in class. Freeman has an extra credit assignment. A theater in town is playing a double feature about female ugly ducklings. Jen hisses to Audrey that Jack is about to make her watch Miss Congeniality, and Audrey says she loves that movie. Audrey is right. The first one is fun. The second one stinks. Regina King deserved better. But if you see Miss Congeniality on HBO Max or wherever, give it a look. It's fun and silly.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
When we see these three next, they're on their way to the movie, Jen telling Audrey that Boston Bay College isn't a party school, and Audrey insisting it's her shit. Jack sees Freeman across the street in front of the theater and says he's going to go talk to him. Jen says Freeman has no idea who Jack is, but Jack says he's raised his hand and talked in class a ton and ignores Jen calling him swim fan. Alas, clip two.
Not a very big turnout, huh?
No, apparently not.
I guess not everybody is as enthusiastic about the girl cried ugly as we are.
Right. I'm sorry, do I know you?
Jack McPhee, I'm in your pop culture class.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jack. That class is massive. Hard to keep people straight.
Yeah, I'll bet.
No. I see what they did there.
Mm-hmm.
But Jack is lucky that no one witnessed that, because it was rough. After the movie, Jack and company find Freeman outside the theater. Freeman remembers Jack's name from before and recognizes Jen, saying he's seen them sitting together. And then he worries he's losing his mind because he doesn't recognize Audrey, who says she's just a fan of Freeman's work and the work of beautiful, ugly women everywhere, as she puts it. Which is perfect. Then she suggests they all go see Joey at work and have some refreshments. Freeman can come too if he's not worried about crossing boundaries. Nice of Audrey to wingman Jack like that. Jack gives Jen the keys to bring his car around, and there's some business around her being surprised, he being allowed to drive his car, and him calling her Jennifer for Freeman's benefit. And then he does all this. Clip three.
I just wanted to tell you that I really enjoy your class.
Oh,
and you know, I haven't really cared about school in a while. In fact, I haven't really cared about anything in a while. But, you know, seeing the work that you put into your lectures and seeing a teacher that's invested in being interesting and dynamic in class and not just trying to blow through another 50 minutes, it just, you know, really means a lot to me. And you know, I didn't even really know what I was going to declare as a major. But now it's, I don't know if it's the way that you word things or it's a subject matter, but I walk away from class still thinking about it, and you know, I just look forward to the next time, and just wondering how I could become more involved.
Yeah. Are we talking about the class, Jack? Are we talking about me?
No. Oh. No, it's not what I meant. It's just, you know, I mean, I'm not... Well, I am, but I have...
Don't sweat it. Look, I'm glad you like the class, and... And I think it'll show in your work this semester.
Brr.
Yeah.
Chilly.
Have a nice rest of your day. I'll see you in class. Turn on your heel. Walk away. Mm-hmm. What is with this show wanting professors and the students who are in the credits to fuck?
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yes. But this one does not do that, at least. And is like, I'm going this way. And Jack's like, me too. So at least he did not wait to see which way Jack was going and pretend to go the opposite way. But yes, Jack leaves the exchange dismayed. And the next morning, Emma's drinking another gross smoothie and Jack's making another bowl of Flutie Flakes, saying he really doesn't want to go to class today and telling her about the capital M moment he thinks he had with Freeman. She doesn't have much to say except that Freeman might have been flattered by Jack's attention. So Jack takes a sip of her smoothie and then immediately spits it into the sink and then chases her around like Kerr Smith has already forgotten Jack's gay from 30 seconds ago.
Mm-hmm.
Not the first, probably not the last of those.
No.
Moving on to our B plot. Brace yourself for a shock. The finance bro Pacey works for is a jerk. On his first morning at work, Pacey joins his roommates, getting laughed at for his dress shirt and tie and roasted for all the product in his hair. Sarah, your thoughts?
His hair looks delicious. The goatee is the problem.
Yes. Yeah, his hair is fine. I don't mind it when it's a little longer like that.
Yeah. And the product, I mean, he has curly hair. He's in North Carolina.
Yes.
You need that amount of product. It looks great.
You do. I agree. Emma scolds Pacey about not putting his dishes in the dishwasher and Jack about leaving the front door unlocked last night, the latter of which Pacey and Jack blame on each other. Between the suit and the nagging, they're like an old-fashioned American family, Jack says. When Pacey arrives at the office at the time he was told to, he realizes on time is actually late because the place is already buzzing. Rinaldi makes another gay joke before telling Pacey his punishment is to take all the worst leads, clip four.
Rich guys sitting on piles of money so high their daughters eloped and sold their own babies on the black market just to put ramen on the table. What? We have never been able to sell them stock, and they will certainly never buy it from the tardy likes of you.
I have so many questions.
Not if you take that long to get to your point. They won't. Oh my God.
Yes. But also, if these leads do have money, why give them to the guy you're punishing? Like, there's probably a list of people with medium amounts of money who you also think won't buy. Like, how I don't get how this is a punishment exactly.
Yeah. Like, if you're expecting him not to be able to do it, then okay. Like, the real punishment would be call a bunch of Q-tips on a fixed income who keep you on the phone for an hour and a half and then buy a share.
And waste your time. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Rinaldi says the prospects he's giving Pacey don't know how dreamy Pacey is, so he should work his blue-collar charm and stop batting his eyes at Rinaldi. Clip five.
Is this some sort of punishment?
Okay, obviously Rinaldi sucks, but I don't know about taking that tone. The first literal minute you have been in this job. Like, it's, I'm not, that's no exaggeration. It's less than a minute has passed since Pacey walked in. So, like, just, yeah. Are you going to do it or are you not? If you're going to do it, stop whining.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, it probably is. This has been set up as the emotional environment from jump. Right. So let yourself be punished or leave.
Right. Yes. And don't act like you're better than the work. Even if you think you are, if you're going to do it, do it. Or go back to a restaurant. These are the options ahead of you. Mm-hmm. Rinaldi cheerfully says he's just trying to get Pacey to leave because he doesn't have enough desks. And then Pacey has to stare down another new arrival who is laughing at him. And when we see Pacey next, we simply must question Audrey's father's judgment about pushing him in this career direction. Clip six.
Well, no, I mean, I certainly understand that logic, Mr. Engel. But I'm telling you, if you invest in this stock right now, your value, I mean, it'll double eventually.
The stock?
Well, the stock is strong. I mean, if you... Percentage-wise? Well, yeah, you're probably looking at a good 15... Hello?
Yeah, that's not going to work.
Well, and also I gather from context, they throw you in the deep end with this stuff, but presumably they do provide some research so you're not just straight up flailing and making stuff up. I mean, don't tell me, I don't care. This is why I don't watch industry, but it just seems like a contrivance for the sake of Pacey looking at sea. Rinaldi comes over to berate Pacey. Even though we just heard Rinaldi tell Pacey to work the blue-collar angle, now he's saying these prospects aren't going to respond to Pacey's plucky blue-collar Southy charm. Pacey corrects him. Obviously, Rinaldi doesn't care. He says Pacey can't talk to them that he's a sensitive sweetie asking them out on a date. He has to make them feel like morons if they doubt his financial prowess. They won't believe it if he doesn't put some heart into it, which also seems like the opposite of what he just said not to do. But Jesus, this guy. Clip seven.
How am I supposed to sell them the stock? I don't even know what the damn thing is.
Find your in with these guys. Become them. Become who they want to be. Think with those judgmental, ageist, racist, sexist, stereotyping parts of your brain that you've worked so hard to conquer. Believe me, you're never going to land a guy like Topper playing the nice guy.
And who exactly is Topper?
Mr. Eli Topper's the next guy in your pile. Fantastically hard sell. He lives in a little apartment on the outskirts of Boston. Doesn't want to pay the city tax. He made his millions in the 80s, and now he's just sitting on it.
Why do you bother going to all the trouble of getting that money if you're not going to use it to better your life?
Guys like Topper believe it can buy him an upgrade in heaven. Since you and I know we're never going there, grab your keys. We're going off campus.
What? Literally, yeah, what to all of this?
If he made his money in the 80s, he has seen Wall Street and he knows your game, so don't fucking bother. That's A. B, if he doesn't know your game, that means that he's non-compos and, you know, this is elder abuse to even ask. Mm. Number three, like, you have to give people the P&L. You have to give them something. Wall Street exists. Like, we don't have to, we don't have to do this. It's not interesting.
No. And none of the people who are watching this show in their, like, teens and, let's say, early 20s, if they started watching it when it premiered, care about it. This shit, it's
no.
So boring.
It really is.
It's worse than business on Melrose Place. Because at least in that context, like, people were fucking. Yeah.
Boiler room.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
So then Pacey and Rinaldi are in Pacey's car, which is messier than we have ever seen it solely for the purposes of this scene. Rinaldi asks if Pacey's been sleeping in it, and Pacey says not lately, he just got an apartment. And Rinaldi's relieved not to have to feel sorry for him and sniffs that you don't see cars like Pacey's around much anymore. Pacey defends the car, which he has no need to do. It's a classic, and until recently in cherry condition, like other than when there was the contrivance of not being able to start it so that he could be forced to go into Alex's car at the end of the previous season. Like, the car runs fine and looks great. Like, the car is fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, Rinaldi is unimpressed and tells Pacey to pull over at a dealership. Pacey hopefully asks if they're going for a test drive, but no, Rinaldi already bought the car he's there for. Pacey can't believe Rinaldi can possibly afford a BMW Z8 when he's barely older than Pacey is. Like, what did you think the point of a job in finance was, a dummy?
Yeah, he's your boss.
Well, that plus
also,
you know, people sometimes make purchases they cannot actually afford for the purposes of projecting a certain image. Like, we don't know that Rinaldi is actually that loaded. We're just assuming he is, because that's the point.
I am assuming he leased it.
Right. Rinaldi says, in fact, your car isn't just a means to get around town. It tells the world something about you. Pacey whines that he happens to like his car, but of course he bites and asks what Rinaldi thinks his car says about him. Clip 8.
Since you're a sentimental fool of a man-child, you're too weak for a real car, so you tinker with your little medium cool vintage one. You surround yourself with all things good, but not good enough. You don't want to grow up, so you don't go to school, and you borrow your suits, and you let your facial hair run amok. It's fine, but then why bother getting in the ring at all if you're not even going to throw a friggin' punch? What, are you going to go into that office every day and watch guys collect their money so you can write a thoughtful piece about it in your memoirs?
Well, maybe. I don't care about any of that stuff. Maybe I'm just trying to pay my rent.
Come on, Pacey. I see something going on in there. You're not subjecting yourself to me because you like my tie. You're hungry, so quit effing around and go for it already.
Okay.
Okay, here's the thing about all of this. Also.
Yes.
He's working on commission, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. Why would he take this job and stick in with this job? If there's going to be, commission is going to be thin on the ground. Like, I don't care. Don't explain to me how this works. Like, he's on some chump base salary, maybe. Right. I don't care. But this whole, like, this helps define who you are, like, your car. I don't know. Like, a Mustang's a pretty bro-y car.
For sure.
And they're not cheap.
Yes. There's a reason we saw Brandon driving his for so many fucking seasons. Like,
yeah,
it reads as cool. I mean, cooler than a BMW, in my opinion, the one that he's getting, which is more overtly penis-y.
Yeah, agree.
After the break, Pacey's decided to quit effing around and go for it on the phone, working topper. Starts with Pacey claiming he didn't touch his savings when his father needed open heart surgery because he got himself into that mess and could get himself out. So having thus established himself as a huge fictional asshole, he goes forward. Quoting Wall Street, including greed is good, and when it actually works, he struts in to brag about it to Rinaldi. And I assume the office layout was different in episode writer Anna Fricke's conception than what we get. Because Pacey finds Rinaldi in the glass-walled conference room where Rinaldi scolds him for walking in without knocking because Rinaldi could have been having a nooner. Like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Like, not even here in this snake pit seems likely that you'd be fucking someone with glass all around you, but whatever. Pacey's feeling himself, and after Rinaldi sends him to get them each a frosty beverage, Rinaldi gops at the space Pacey has just vacated for like 6 full seconds. You can see this in the visual aids.
Mm-hmm.
When we rejoin Pacey, he's trying and failing to sell Mr. Fricky. Yes, just like the episode writer Anna, and Rinaldi razzes that he knew Pacey was a one-hit wonder. He gives Pacey some change for lunch, which no one else is getting today. And in the break room, the other peons are abuzz about a call none of them heard, but that Johnson said was killer. Clip 9.
Rinaldi, man. He closed topper. What?
Said it couldn't be done.
The guy is like my personal god.
Hey, ease up, Henderson. You're looking a little light in the loafers.
Hey, you think I got a partner for that?
Oh, he'll get something.
Okay. I mean, where I thought this was going as of the prior scene was that Bobby from Twin Peaks was going to reveal that he was Topper or that Pacey was being otherwise punked somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a hazing test.
Mm-hmm.
This is not an improvement, but man, I can't wait for this storyline to be over. And it's going to be so many weeks.
No. Later, we find out Pacey has waited until the end of the day for the office to empty out so that he can confront Rinaldi. Clip 10.
And please, do me a favor and just spare me the dinosaur speech on what a sucker I am until I've left, okay?
It took me a couple of rewinds to get he was not saying dinosaur speech. He's saying dime store speech, but just really puts in an extra syllable in the middle there.
Dimestery.
Okay. Also, is this a reference that Pacey would make? Like, dime stores have not existed in my lifetime. They have not existed in his, for sure. But whatever. Pacey confronts Rinaldi about why he bothered doing the whole tough love routine and building up Pacey's confidence, only to claim Pacey's win for himself. Rinaldi says that running Pacey hard is his job, but praising him isn't, and selling Topper was a fluke. They don't hand those deals to guys on their first day who haven't taken their Series 7 exams yet. Clip 11.
I'm just supposed to turn the other way on this? I'm supposed to slap you on the back, congratulate you on a job well done like the rest of your minions? No, man, that is not why I came here.
You can do what you want to do. Maybe you'd rather continue floating numbly in the status quo. Maybe you want to be me, and that's so scary you can't think straight. So walk away, Witter. That's what you do. And this is what I do, and I'm freaking good at it. You wish you were this good, and that's why you bothered trying. You think someone didn't do the exact same thing to me?
Okay.
Okay. Boo-hoo. But also, right. Good at what?
Right.
What is it that you do, aside from not get your suits tailored properly, Bobby from Twin Peaks?
Yeah.
Oh, I hate this so much.
Also, for him to be like, why don't you just walk away? That's what you're good at, is like when Alex was like, everyone thinks you did it already, so why don't you just do it, trying to seduce him? Like, both of these imply these characters watch the show and know about Pacey's psychology. Like, you guys just met. What do you mean walking away is what you do?
Yeah, like, huh? Did they put out a bolo with his character brief? That's so dumb. Right.
It is. It's very lazy. When Pacey joins the gang at Hell's Kitchen later, going straight to the can to freshen up, Audrey asks Jack what it's like living with Emma. Like, is she always walking around in her underwear asking the guys to zip her up? Like, we've only seen this person in jeans. I think she can zip up her own pants, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But Jack says they all took a bath together that morning. Har, har. Jen thought he only took baths with Grams. Har, har, har. Pacey returns and asks to talk to Audrey outside, where we rejoin them after he's just finished telling her the story of his day, and she is incensed at the injustice. Pacey agrees that the situation is bullshit, but that tattling isn't going to help. Also, tattle to whom? Who else is above, what's his name, Rinaldi, that he even has access to? But Pacey says he just needs to figure out how to get through his days. Audrey doesn't think that at age 20 he should be waiting for time to pass, and he should quit. Agree. But Pacey thinks he's been killing time too long and now wants to make something for himself. Audrey pretends she thinks he means he's just been killing time with her, which, of course, he does not. He says they come from different worlds. He didn't realize how different until this summer. Audrey says their dads are basically the same kind of bastard. Hers just wears more expensive suits. Pacey's trying to say he needs respect out in the world. Maybe he has to take a different path than he thought, but that's life. And right now he wants to sleep, and they have the same exchange as in the season premiere where he makes sure she understands he really wants to sleep. Trouble in paradise again. Audrey says they can do whatever he wants, but is it always going to be like this? He doesn't know. And then they're, as again in the season premiere, like, oh, maybe we don't have to go straight to sleep, but they walk away hip-checking each other, and it's cute.
Mm-hmm.
And after doing the dishes and leaving the apartment at the crack of dawn, Pacey's the first one at the office, exchanging a look of mutual bro respect for Rinaldi. Oh, good. I worried that Rinaldi wouldn't like him anymore. Just kidding. No one cares. So boring.
Oh my God, it's so boring. And he slicked his hair back Rinaldi style instead of shaving off the goatee, which is, I'm pretty sure, what he was supposed to take from that speech at the dealership. Or maybe I just want that Brazilian wax nonsense off his face.
Oh my God, seriously.
It's not helping.
On to the A plot. Oh God. Whoa. Joey learns the hard way how important proofreading is. We start with a cold open where almost nothing happens. Joey's trying to write an email to Dawson. Subject line, the incident. Kind of funny. And has apparently been trying to write it since Audrey went out shopping before the events of the episode, because Audrey is disgusted to come back and see Joey exactly where Audrey left her. Audrey's also got some hot takes that have aged pretty well. Clip 12.
Email expression is the scourge of the modern age. The internet has made it way too easy to express oneself.
True.
Okay, you have some fleeting thought. You send it. It lands with a thud in some unsuspecting person's mailbox. Said person then reads it, gets irked because you've recapped a conversation that you presumably already had. They fail to respond. You feel slighted. But if you must be one of these pathetic, passive-aggressive email types, far be it from me to stop you. What do you have so far?
Well,
I had Dear Dawson and then I erased it.
If only David Wilder could see her now.
Oh my God.
Future hope of American literature. Not really.
The voice of a generation, which is how long it took her to not write that email.
Mm-hmm. But everything Audrey said was kind of true. It's just more about, like, you shouldn't tweet. You shouldn't send a text you're not sure about. Like, mm-hmm. I listened to an advice podcast this week where two straight guys, by the way, were analyzing a caller's, like, question about, I texted my husband this and he responded this way. What do you think it means? And we're, like, taking it quite seriously. And so it's just, you know. Everything Audrey has diagnosed is no better. In fact, it's kind of worse.
Yeah, because there's more venues for this, more pitfalls.
It's true. If you are writing an email like this, I'm going to say, write it, save it, read it again the next day and see if you still feel the same way. Never mind what Joey is about to fuck up. Let it sit.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Joey's not sure if Dear Dawson is cold, and Audrey gets it. Clip 13.
True. I mean, he did just nude up with the guy. Oh, I'm sorry. Or did you guys do it through a hole in a sheet? Because that's very Dawson Joey to me.
Again, shut up.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
I can't believe that's not on the air.
I can't either. Holy
pretty
bundling.
Funny,
yeah, it's pretty good.
Audrey asks what Joey wants to say. Joey doesn't like how things ended. She wants Dawson to know she cares, but she also wants to hold on to her righteous indignation. What she does not want to do is call him on the phone because she assumes they will just end up in their old patterns. If Joey's determined to do this, Audrey tells her to be gooey, sentimental, and real, writing everything she can't say to Dawson's face. So cue a montage of Joey actually committing words to digital paper. Some of what we see... I don't know where to begin because I'm an idiot. And sentence continues. I don't know how to be together, not in the present tense. I thought this would be the time it lasted, but I don't think we know how to stop tripping each other up. It's like we're trying to stop the other one from getting ahead into the future. Maybe we need to grow up separately, turn our backs on each other for a while. I don't know if I'll be here when you turn around. I don't know how not to love you. I wish you well. Speaking of cold, I wish it hadn't come to this. This is the natural conclusion, and then she signs it just Joey, not love or yours or best regards or anything, which, yeah, okay, fine.
Yeah, no dismissive double dash. Come on, girl.
Hours and one t-shirt change later, Joey decides not to read what she has just spent the day barfing up, mouses over to her AOL address book, and with her eyes closed, clicks what she thinks is Dawson's email, but is actually campus-wide directly above it, which is a diss list, frankly, no person at Worthington should have access to. That should not be in her address book, or anyone's.
No. God, no.
But regardless, that's what happens, and then she gets her dumb ass into bed, and the next morning, Joey wakes up with a start, checks her email, which requires her to get out of bed and go to her computer because it is the past. And even though I'm pretty sure we saw the AOL logo in the previous scene, it was, I guess, not official product placement. Clip 14.
You've got a message.
Nope. That's not
You've
the phrase.
You've got a letter. Okay.
In fact, Joey has dozens of emails from Worthington students, including, and I looked them all up, Caleb Wampel, North Carolina script coordinator on Dawson's Creek, Chad Graves, Dawson's Creek first AD, Dale Williams, associate producer, David Hartley, unit production manager. Second time David Hartley has been name checked in the show, by the way. He was also in the season 5 premiere or mentioned, confused for Dawson. Frank Waldeck, second and later first AD. Greg Prange, director, not of this episode. That was Joanna Kearns, the mom from Growing Pains. Heather Brannon, assistant production coordinator, Michael Jefferson, another second AD, Roger Lively, payroll accountant, and Frank Pearl, another director, and Larry Long, sound mixer. Joey sees these are all replies to an email with the subject line, the incident. She goes to her sent mail and sees her mistake, getting Audrey out of a dead sleep to yell about it in horror. Clip 15.
Well, honey, why would you do that?
It was a mistake. I was tired. Clicked on the wrong address.
See, I told you that wasn't a good idea.
That's all you have to say?
I don't know. It's nice to be you.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Like, you want to be the main character? This is that.
It
Enjoy.
Is. It is. And then Joey's apparently the last to get to her lit class again. I think I personally would just cut the rest of the week and wait for some other moron to do something equally stupid or ideally stupider.
Oh my God, it's college. It won't take long. Just send Audrey out for coffee and stay in your room for 36 hours. It really does not take that long.
Watch Miss Congeniality. Everyone should. But she doesn't and finds everyone else snickering in small groups looking at printouts. Clip 16.
You may recall we were wrapping up a rather depraved discussion of Portnoy's complaint last week. Sadly, we won't be dabbling in Roth's stream of consciousness sexual rivers much longer. But fate assigned us some additional reading last night via email. I think you all got a copy, so why not? Let's discuss something you actually might have read. Dear Dawson.
Okay, come on,
Dawson.
Man.
Dawson.
You know that one. That's... Yeah, it's not complicated.
But also, I'll give him that one. That was funny. Everything that happens in this storyline is incredible.
Yes.
And not in the good way.
No.
I just don't buy it. I don't buy that she would stay. I don't buy that she would not object. I don't buy that some other student wouldn't object. This is fireable offense level. I don't.
Yes, absolutely.
And yet it just continues.
Well, yes, Joey does try to stop him, but he will not be stopped. Clip 17.
Nobody likes to show off, Potter. You don't reach a point for several paragraphs, so I'll skip ahead. In the moment when we touched, maybe we went somewhere else that rose above all this, but then we landed, and I think maybe we crashed. Why, when broaching the topic of sex, do so many writers try and write themselves out of it? Sexuality... and all its dysfunctions are intrinsic to the human experience. Maybe the one thing we can all relate to at the end of the day. Well, neuroses and the God thing aside. And the reason that Roth seduced us and Miss Morning After here didn't is that while Roth isn't afraid to get his hands, well, quite literally dirty with rapid-fire sensual description, our email author here distances herself from the act with vague metaphors. Can't be stream of consciousness if you're observing from the shores. Right? Right.
Okay.
No.
No. This isn't a short story or a novel.
Yes, thank you. He was there. He knows they fucked. Why would she have to narrate it? That's like, and then you know, dropped your boxer briefs. Like, he knows.
Yeah.
He was there. They don't drink.
Right. If you want to compare this to something, go for an epistolary novel at the very least. Not Portnoy's Complaint.
God. Well, and Portnoy's Complaint. Of course, that guy is like.
Seriously.
Are you scandalized yet? Like, oh my God. Whatever.
Everyone laughs. Joey presumably ponders either transferring to fake Yale or filing a formal complaint with the English department about this harassment, because that's it is.
Oh, yeah. That's what it is, and a complaint is overdue, because Wilder.
Yeah. When we see Joey next, she's at Hell's Kitchen for her first shift, confirming to Emma she already knows what she can legally do as an underage server. Emma sends her to a table of 20-somethings, and clip 18.
All I know is that I would think long and hard before sending an email like that to a guy I just slept with.
I know, right? I mean, unless you just really never wanted to hear from him again. Isn't what you want to do?
Well, come on, not all guys are like that.
Oh, whatever, Mike.
You're gay. Can I have a quesadilla and a pale ale?
Well, maybe the guy is gay, too, and that's why he screwed her over.
Okay.
Look.
She is obviously starving for attention. Broadcasting it like that? I mean, really, what's the point? Unless you're on The Real World or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, and... this is just a shot in the dark. She didn't mean to send it to the gossips at large. Maybe she's just trying to get some private closure and never dreamed she'd be subjected to the Oprah psychobabble of her life-lacking peers. Do you guys want something to eat, or should I just bring over a nice tray of bonbons so you guys can hunker down and watch your stories?
Maybe later.
Perfect response. Fuck off, Joey. You work for tips.
Yes.
You fucked up. We have all replied all. It happens. Just wait it out. And also, Oprah psychobabble of your life-lacking peers?
Yeah, no.
Stop drawing attention to her writing and speaking. She's not good at it.
No.
Make her a history major, please.
Yes. Also, not bonbons. Say, you know, maybe I should get you some catnip or kibble or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Sometime later, Emma and Joey are chit-chatting about whether Emma made a mistake letting Jack and Pacey move in with her when Hetson enters and Joey seizes up. Emma says he comes in all the time and Joey's like, of course, he's been assigned to ruin my life. Emma does not have time to coddle Joey and tells her to nip whatever this is in the bud. So Joey stands in front of Hetson, glaring. Clip 19.
See why this joint would be much more alluring than the confines of the English department. All that silence, all those books.
And of course, your constant positive reinforcement.
Yeah. That would get really annoying after a while. Are you waiting for me to order, or did you have something to say? Because it kind of looks like you've got your bone to pick face on.
And how would you know what that looks like?
Word gets around.
Joey kind of snorts, even though I would have a follow-up question. Like, what did David Wilder tell you about me?
Mm-hmm. Hello? And how much money do you have so that I can fill out the forms for the lawsuit?
Seriously. Hetson orders. Joey takes a few steps to put it in. But then, clip 20.
Professor Hetson.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, even a broken frosted tip is right twice a day.
It's true. Only because she is such a pill will I laugh at that, because he is obviously 100% in the wrong, as we have said.
Yes.
Joey starts filibustering about how effective his tough love thing probably is, but after today, she wishes he had turned her away from his modern comp lit class when he had the chance. He thought she would be flattered to be in the spotlight. She would like to know if today's evisceration means she is safe from his attacks through November, or if this is just how shit's gonna be. Well, he says they're about to get into Joyce and Wolf, and Joey's work just provided such a marked contrast, he says. I don't know how you designed this course, but why is Portnoy's complaint before Joyce and Wolf? Joey glares some more and starts to walk off, but Hetson stops her to say if she fancies herself some kind of a writer, she should know they have to endure public humiliation every once in a while. Clip 21.
You were the one that walked into my office promising me fearless academic ego, but I have yet to see it. If you can't handle my class, and countless have died trying, why don't you just quit?
I'm not a quitter.
You know, people love saying that. It's like they saw it in some movie once and they liked the way it sounded.
Look, I'm not just saying it, okay? I wanted to take your class because I wanted to learn something and I wanted to work hard, but I didn't want to be personally ridiculed in the process.
Your heartfelt rant to what's-his-name proved good fodder for the topic at hand. It's hard to write that sex stuff, which you aptly proved. And if, by chance, one day you manage to get your writing circulated beyond the campus inbox, there will always be an irritable writer type claiming to do better. All right, maybe you didn't mean for this one to go out into the world. Whatever, bygones. Declare victory and move on.
Where's the victory in this little scenario?
One down, only a lifetime of proving yourself left to go. And if you're staying in my class, start proving that it's worth it. To one of us, at least.
It's not a creative writing class, my dude.
I mean, it's clearly not worth it because you're that guy. Mm-hmm. And nothing you said made any sense.
Mm-mm. Even if this were a creative writing class, like we said, this is harassment. It would be actionable. And also, this guy presumably would have read the literary journal that his department put out. So now I'm waiting for a reveal that he read her piece and spent the summer deciding how to destroy her if he got the chance.
I mean, that level of pettiness seems relatable.
Right, sure.
To me, but maybe not to a tenured professor, frosted tips or not. God, this is just so tiresome.
Yeah, I would love a side episode about like all of the lawsuits this English department has had to field between this guy and Wilder. Like, seriously.
Oh, God.
Later, Joey has just taken an order when Eddie arrives for his shift. Joey needs two beers, you know, the beer that people order, and a vodka tonic. And Eddie remembers that Joey can't pour her own drinks because she's underage, sarcastically commenting that babysitting her is going to be fun on top of everything else. She snits back about what he means, but he's not interested in taking on her rage at the world right now. He assumes she will be just as oversensitive tomorrow. Good assumption.
Mm-hmm.
Joey accuses him of trying to make her crack. Clip 22.
The endless horrors of the day are a waste unless they result in my nervous breakdown.
No, it's horrors, not endless horrors. Actually.
Yeah. Don't talk to me like that, Potter.
No. And he's like, I guess you had a bad day. And she launches into a tirade describing in cringeworthy detail all the offenses and slights her own email mistake, lest we forget, has made her subject to. One of them is that she reached for the last Jell-O and got unsolicited sex advice from a stranger, which, unless the stranger's also in Hetson's class, I don't know how in 2002 they would connect the sender of the email to Joey. I mean, I guess there were Facebooks then, but whatever. We get this. Clip 23.
You know, contrary to popular belief, I didn't send that email to get feedback from you and everyone else. And I was kind of thinking that since I've been mocked for the better part of the day, maybe you could spare me and concentrate on your own deep unhappiness for a while.
You know, strangely, before you got all crazy confessional on me, that's exactly what I was doing. I hadn't been planning how to best torture you. You see, we don't just walk off into a void when we leave your line of vision. Some of us even have our own lives and don't even talk about you at all. Now, I'm sorry that some brutal Ivy League kids made fun of your email today. To tell you the truth, I'm not much of an internet kind of guy. So, sadly, I've missed yet another aspect of your riveting, charmed life. But if you can't pour the drinks, can you at least serve them? Thanks.
Seriously.
Eddie.
That literally is what my notes read. It's like, yeah. Thank you. Yes. No one fucking cares.
Also, the more he talks about, like, some of us don't talk about you at all. Like, oh, must be nice. I wish I was you, Eddie.
Enjoy.
I also can't tell if it's Joey or Katie Holmes who reacts to Eddie calling out her self-involvement by staring back at him with contempt, but it is the wrong choice. Joey should be very embarrassed to have assumed she was top of mind for someone who had not mentioned her fucking email at all.
Yeah. And who looks like that?
Well,
like, find a different face.
Seriously.
It's the wrong face. This character is dumb and I don't need it, but let's just get through this. He's fine. He has a lot of bracelets. You're going to fuck. Different face.
Then Joey's friends have actually made it to Hell's Kitchen for ridiculously overpriced soft drinks again and to commiserate about her terrible day. Audrey says she barely heard about the email today, probably because she was at a different school, as Joey notes. I think something like this would have spread to Boston Bay College, actually.
Probably via Audrey, and you know what? Bless your heart. Car talk.
Yep. When Joey confirms that Dawson has not actually gotten this email and is oblivious about all of this, which is hilarious to be reminded about, Jen says that might be a good thing. This way, Dawson and Joey have a little space between them, and Joey still has a clean slate. Jack adds that personal humiliation could have been worse than what Joey actually endured today. Audrey thinks they're insane and says so, but then remembers who the queen is and offers to be Joey's email sponsor. The next time Joey wants to express herself, she can call Audrey to stop her. Jen, ogling Eddie, asks Joey about him, calling him a ruggedly dreamy sort. And at this moment, Joey turns around and sees him laughing to someone at the bar and, like, I never thought much of Oliver Hudson either way, but he's got a very nice smile. He looks hot laughing.
Uh-huh. He's cute.
Joey says he has a chip on his shoulder roughly the size of, well, her own, actually, she says, self-awarely. Then Jack and Jen are leaving the bar at close. Eddie hands Joey her tips. She tries to apologize for earlier, but he cuts her off and says it's okay. And when he asks, she says no, he didn't miss anything in class except the email that caused her freak out earlier. And then these motherfuckers, clip 24. Like springtime. Did they get a discount if they put it in every episode? Like, what the fuck? Stop
also,
it.
Why is Sophie B following us around on this podcast?
I know.
Girl, it's not you, it's us, but stop.
The 90210 one, Damn, I Wish I Was Your Lover, that at least is a 90s classic. This one is bad, and I will stand by that. Eddie watches Joey shut down like in that Seinfeld episode where Elaine dates the guy who zones out whenever he hears Desperado. And Eddie says this, clip 25.
Man, I hate this song.
Yes, Eddie.
Yeah, Eddie.
Joey smiles at him and clip 26.
Yeah, me too.
No, you don't, you fucking poser.
Yeah, but also bye, Dawson.
I guess. And Gail's car. So many memories. Eddie goes over to the jukebox, kicking it a couple of times to make a change. Let's call that the foot Fonzie. And the next day, fucking Joey, the fucking queen of school, is late again to Hetson's class. Clip 27.
Oh, it's so nice to see you, Potter. Hope our pesky class didn't interfere with your all-important email schedule.
Whip out another diatribe last night?
Actually, I did. I was hoping this was it. Did you guys not get it?
Oh, this is actually a copy of the article that I assigned to follow up the reading. I know your mini-drama probably prevented you from even looking at the syllabus.
Well, most of yesterday consisted of eviscerating my personal life, and every other lesson is a rant composed of your dated theories. I'm sorry I'm late, Professor Hetson, but the first half of class is usually when you reveal how bitter you are, how moronic we are, and how literature is dead. Were you thinking of moving on to something slightly more stimulating today?
Ew.
Bye. I think we've been spending too much time together, Potter, if that's your attitude. I mean, I was thinking of teaching today, but I don't know if I've got a lot to offer, what with the tenure and the published articles and all. But if you all insist on being stimulated, why don't we discuss James Joyce's description of the girl on the beach? I mean, I'm too hackneyed to illuminate this subject, but maybe someone else can shed some light.
That's not how you use hackneyed.
No.
I doubt anyone would have given you tenure, but they did. Fine. Ew. This is all just so dumb. And then she gets these dazzled looks for both Hetson and Eddie. Like, oh my fucking God, are you joking?
Right. Meanwhile, everyone else in class is like, can you two just fuck? I paid a lot for this credit. I'm actually trying to learn something.
Now, could we talk about someone who knows how to write? James Joyce? Great. Cool.
Anyway, Hetson calls on a different victim, and Joey and Eddie exchange a look across the room. And again, I know people hate Eddie. He's kind of working for me so far. Sorry.
Yeah.
And just when you were thinking, wait, whose creek is this? We cut to a studio lot in L.A. Inside an office, everyone's bustling around Dawson, who is glaring at his laptop screen. We see he is writing an email to Dear Joey. His first line is, I was going to call you about five times yesterday, which he then deletes just before Todd calls him to something else. And Dawson minimizes his screen, managing not to send Dear Joey to the entire production company. And that's where we end. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. I mean, there's a couple of good options, but I got to go with Eddie for telling Joey to shut the fuck up.
Yeah. And looking pretty cute doing it.
Looking foxy. Mm-hmm. Least valuable player. Joey, don't click anything with your eyes closed. What is wrong with you, you fucking dumbass?
Yeah. Ivy League, ladies and gents. Ivy League. As bad as Professor Hetson is, he gets scores a couple of points off her. You can't count them because he's harassing her and should be fired.
Yes.
But that leaves the Worthington English department.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing?
Yep.
Next time on Again With This, Dawson's recent ex, Natasha, gets him fired. Eddie gets Joey hot and bothered. Pacey gets a lap dance and then gets in trouble with Audrey. And Professor Ambiguous gets his wife pregnant and celebrates by trying to get with Jack.
Boo!
You can get flashbacks to the Delia's catalog, 4-inch pants rises, and much more aughts fashion in our visual aids. That's the crucial screenshots and GIFs we do for every episode of the Again With This podcast. You can find them along with the full archive of the episodes themselves on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. I'm Endless Whore Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Sentimental Fool Tara Ariano. She's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, man, he closed Topper. Talk to you next time.
Oh, this is going to be bad.
And it was.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, sure was. Bad and boring.